Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 98 of season 11 of the Movie Around Midnight Theater podcast, where we currently are way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and join me once again to start the opening salvo of another part, this time part 8, is Jay Kluet, Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back once again, Jay.
Hello, I'm back. I've been missing for a while, I think. I feel like I've been out of the trenches, out of the Bastogne coldness that you've been experiencing for a little while now. But I'm back, and I'm fresh-faced and bushy-tailed and all ready to go.
Right. It's only been, 3 weeks since you've been here? Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. But, I mean, you've been through so much. You've seen so much hardship in that time. Been sailing through, just listening, and yeah, it's all fine.
That's true, and whatever. I mean, you got to talk right after Grammy Ost, so that's good too.
Sure, I'm happy to. I'll always follow Graham. That's not a problem. Hey, he's my opener.
If there's somebody you want to be able to follow in their footsteps, why not him? Right.
Sure. Why not?
Episode 98 begins with the opening credits of Part 8. And ends with Winters being concerned about the conditions. So part 8 is called The Last Patrol. And the first thing we get on the screen is that it is February 9th, 1945. And we are in Haguenau, France. So, I mean, it's interesting, though, that right before this, the guys were in Belgium and another moved back to France. And they keep moving them back and forth. It's not as if they're moving in one fluid motion forward the entire time.
So yeah, they can't put roots down. They can't get comfortable anywhere. I guess Bastogne was the place they were in for longest, and they weren't happy about that.
Right. It's true. And the shot begins with a nice pan on the town of Haguenau, and we see that the weather isn't that great. There is snow on the ground. There's looks like flurries are happening. We see basically this entire town has been taken over by the U.S. Army, a lot of trucks, a lot of water on the roads also. And
what happened? That's what you get after snow.
Usually,
you get one then the other.
Usually, yeah. And we see the men on the transports, basically freezing. And then a jeep pulls up, and we see someone get off the jeep, and we see that it's Webster, who we haven't seen in a few episodes since he got injured. Back when they were in the Netherlands.
How did he get injured? I didn't recall what happened.
He got shot, and he says, I got hit. And he goes, I can't believe I said I got hit.
That's right. Okay, sure.
It was right at the same time that it was in the Bull in the Barn episode.
Right, okay.
Because he was one of Bull's men.
Sure, yes. No worries.
So, or maybe it was in Crossroads. Now I'm trying to remember which episode he got injured in. Maybe it was in episode 5, not in episode 4. Don't remember. it's one of the things.
But he was in episodes 4 and 5, so I imagine it probably would have been episode 5.
So he was injured in episode 5. There you go. Yeah. Right. Webster is played by Ian Bailey. And again, he's been in 6 different episodes. He was in, part 1, 4, 5, 8, 9, and 10, which sort of just gave a little bit of a spoiler of what happens to him over the next 3 episodes. But oh well.
he makes it through at least until episode 10. We won't say if he makes it to the end of episode 10, but he's there.
That is very true. And he begins his narration. He goes, "The 101st Airborne had been made famous by what it did in the Battle of the Bulge. Newspapers called them the battered bastards of Bastogne. They'd been through hell on earth, and were now pulling into the comparative paradise of Haguenau. The sounds of war still coming from just across the river. I had missed Bastogne. All I knew was that I'd read and heard about the replacement depot, that we had broken the back of the enemy, and the war should soon be over." And, as he gets out of the jeep, he thanks the driver, and then he continues his narration. When I was finally able to rejoin the music company, they looked nothing like the heroes who had just helped win the war. And again, it's a great perspective that they give us here of a guy who was part of them and then was away for a few months, but didn't run back to, I mean, it's something that will be mentioned numerous times over the course of this part. You know, when people are talking to Webster about the fact that, you know, he didn't make any concerted effort to try and get back, like some of the other guys that we've seen. You know, Garnier ran out of the, you know, ran out of the medical ward to get back. Probably shouldn't have done that. Oh, yeah. But, you know, Popeye did the same thing. You know, these are guys that they knew that if they were, if they stayed in the hospital, there was a chance that they wouldn't be able to reconnect with the guys of Easy. But Webster didn't do that. You know, he dealt with his injury, and you know, it I think he was away for like 2 or 3 months. So you know, there's a bit of animosity towards him because of it.
It's kind of like bad timing that the bit he missed was the worst part. By how it's posed to us, presented to us. But it seems Bastogne was the real nadir of their experience. Yep. In the European theatre, and I can understand that. It looked awful. But did I apologize for asking questions you want to know. Did Garnier and Popeye and the others who managed to make it back, were they injured in Bastogne?
No.
So they're like sore?
No, okay, they were injured okay. Before. Popeye was injured back on D-Day, and then he came back.
Yes, that's right. Yes, he was taken right, out early on. D-Day.
And Garnier, I'm trying to remember when he was injured, but you know, for him, he basically said it was just a few scratches, and then you know, made his way back. He was back before they even went into Bastogne, because it was in Crossroads that he came back. So maybe he must have been. I don't think he was injured when Buck was injured, because Buck was injured in Bull in the Barn, because when Buck got shot in the ass. Again, it's a very common thing for guys in Easy Company. A lot of them got shot in the ass. Lip got shot. Lip got shot in the ass also. Apparently, it's a very easy easy target, you know, for the Germans. You know, if we're gonna shoot a guy in Easy, let's shoot him in the ass. You know, that more or less. It sounds as if that's the way to do it. I was going to say, I wonder if you know, when they wrote the script for Forrest Gump and decided to have him get shot in the ass, they were thinking of, you know, the guys from Easy Company. I don't know.
It happened to the guy from The Mummy. Well, sorry, The Mummy Returns, I think it is. Is it Lenny James? Anyway.
Yeah. If Mark was on, the guy who has the blimp. Would be doing an analysis of, you know, in how many movies were soldiers shot in the ass?
Yeah. I mean, he may have already done this before. I don't know. I'll have to check. But I was trying to think, if I were in Webster's shoes, I tend to listen to the advice of medical professionals if they are performing if they are giving me advice on how to recover. And if I was told you need to wait here for like 3 months before returning, I would be like, okay, you know what's best. And then I would come back and be in the situation he is. I don't think I would be desperate to return. So I get where he's coming from. But also, his wound may have been severe than
Webster's
the likes of Garnier and Popeye. I don't know. When
they were near
Arnhem, that would impede your walking.
You know, in October 1944. If they were near Arnhem, so that was actually during Operation Market Garden. You know, and he only came back in February.
Okay, so that was just before Bastogne, whereas Popeye was months before that. So of course Popeye's going to be back in time. They're being too hard on Webster. I get why they are. I get it. I get everyone's perspective.
Now, I did a quick search, and apparently there is a list on IMDb of 129 movies where characters are shot in the butt. They're not all just war movies, but you know, obviously number one on the list is Forrest Gump, followed by Band of Brothers.
Sure.
And that's right. In Training Day, Wedding Crashers, Dances with Wolves. National Lampoon's Yeah.
Wedding crashes.
It says Vince Vaughn's character is shot in the buttocks during a scene.
Hunting scene. Yeah, sure.
Okay. In Kingsman, the Secret Service. it lists the Three Stooges on this list. Obviously.
I mean, sure, that doesn't surprise me. I haven't seen any of it, but it doesn't surprise me that someone gets shot in the arse.
Actually, Wolves, he was shot in... Wasn't it an arrow? I don't know. Whatever. It doesn't really make a difference.
It still counts as being shot if it's an arrow.
No, but I was thinking from the...
Sean Parks was the actor I was thinking of from The Mummy Returns. He says he got shot in the arse.
I was just thinking from perspective of a gun. But I agree. It doesn't matter what you get shot from. An arrow is just as lethal and painful. Possibly even more.
They probably wouldn't count being shot with a camera.
Get stuck in there, as opposed to like with Buck. They said he got shot and he had four holes, so it went all the way through. That's right.
Yeah, it goes in and out and in and out. Yeah.
That's
right. All the way through a couple of times. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a common trope, I guess. And Webster then starts moving across the transports, trying to find somebody that he sees. And then he sees someone. He goes, "Hey, George Luz." Luz looks at him and goes, "Yeah." Webster goes, "It's me." And Luz just gives him a look, and he goes, "Come on. I haven't been gone that long." And Luz goes, "Jesus, yes, you have." And then he screams out, and he goes, "Now look what I found." He goes, "Hey, guys." And then Webster goes, "Hey, Sergeant Martin." He goes, "What do you want, private?" He goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir. My name is David Webster. I just got back from the hospital." "Good for you. Where's the rest of the guys?" "This is everybody." "Oh, come on, Sergeant Martin. This can't be everybody. What about Hoobler? Where's he?" Now,
this is so frustrating. Read the room, guy.
Like, where are you? Forget about the fact that it's possible people were injured or killed.
You're a goddamn warrior, Muppet.
That's right. And you can see that the guys are very upset and frustrated by this happy-go-lucky attitude, from Webster. And then Cobb just goes, "Hey, Lieutenant Foley."
He's all clean-shaven and clean-faced and... "Hey, boys, I'm back. Where's all my mates?" Specifically calling out people who are dead or wounded.
And Cobb then says to him, "Hey, Lieutenant Foley, 2nd Platoon lost more guys than we did. They're really shorthanded." And then another guy goes, "Yeah, right. Report to 2nd Webster. He'll find a place for you. Next truck, Webster. You'll find 2nd. Move." So then he moves to the next one. And once again, "Hey, guys. Some lieutenant told me to report to 2nd. And then he turns to one of the guys and goes, "Your name's Jackson, right?" And he goes, "Yeah, that's right." He goes, "Who's leading the platoon?" "Sergeant Malarkey is." "What? No officers?" "I guess you didn't hear." "No, what's that?" "They're making Malarkey a lieutenant. He's on the fast track now." "Really? That's great." Again, very naive, the way that he's talking about it. "Yeah, isn't it?" "Yeah." "Jackson, help me up, will ya?" And then Liebgott looks at him, and Liebgott's one of the guys is going to be giving Webster a very hard time throughout this entire part. And he goes, "So, come from the hospital?" He goes, "Yeah, must have liked the hospital, because we left Holland 4 months ago." "Well, I wasn't there the whole time. There was rehabilitation, then the replacement depot. Well, I'm sure you tried to bust out and help us in that stone web. I don't know how I would have done that. That's funny, because Popeye found a way. So did Allie, right? Back in Holland, and Garnier, and hey, yeah, where is Garnier? He's still your platoon sergeant?" "No." And again, I agree with you. This is just a really annoying conversation for them to be having, because we see that Webster is completely clueless. He didn't get the memo when he started talking about Hoobler, that maybe I shouldn't start asking about all these different guys. Like, where could they possibly be?
Yeah, maybe they're on the next truck. They'll be on the next truck. Just the next truck.
No, but these are the guys from the second platoon. Yeah. So why is in the air, you know? Because he got hit. He goes, yeah. Yeah, Bill got hit. Blew his whole leg off.
How they're saying is that, hey, you should have come back out of the hospital. Like Garnier, you know, the guy who lost his leg recently. You should have done that. They're not selling it to him.
That's right.
I'd be like, well, good job it didn't come back early then, isn't it?
And he's really just completely clueless here with this whole thing. I do like the tracking shot, you know, going from truck to truck. You know, it's following Webster, and we get to see, you know, these gritty guys on the truck. And the truck keeps moving, and he's walking after the truck, trying to get a little bit of information from them. But they really don't want to give it. You know, none of them are really in the mood for this. Understandably.
Now with the previous truck, and you see it later in the episode, Dexter Fletcher has such a good, like, looking at a piece of gum on his shoe expression when he's looking at Webster. He's got a good face for that.
Yeah. No, it's nice the way that they do this. And you also see the guys are basically freezing. You know, they all have, you know, heavy coats on. They have, you know, gloves, things like that, trying to figure out, you know, as you said before, they all need a shave. Webster, on the other hand, you know, comes in, he's clean shaven. His clothes are all neat and clean, stuff like that. And then everyone gets off the truck. Mularkey starts giving instructions. Goes, okay, spread out. Hold along this line until I figure out where we're going. And then we hear the sound of a mortar dropping in. Basically, everyone is okay with it except for Webster, who just jumps.
Ives.
And
dives. He dives. He doesn't jump. He like leaps into the road.
And then Mularkey turns to him and goes, "What's the matter there, Webster? Nervous in the service?
Nervous in the service?
Oh yeah. No, I'm fine, Sarge." And then Mularkey says to him, "Well, why don't you go talk to Captain Spears? Make sure he wants you with us." Captain Spears? What happened to Captain Winters? He's running the whole battalion now. You see, again, he should have learned by now not to ask about. It's possible Winters was dead.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. Well, so
this
I feel
is
like
the one time when they're actually telling him.
Sorry.
But when they're giving him information, and they're basically saying, you know, this is someone who's actually promoted.
He's one of the lucky ones.
And then Mularkey just tells him, just go. And so Webster continues walking, and we get more narration from him. So Easy Company had a new CO to go along with all the other new faces. The guys I knew were either gone or very different from what I remember. And then we see Lip setting up in one of the houses on one of the couches. He goes, "I was a veteran of D-Day in Market Garden. And I'd been with the company since its formation, but now because I'd missed Bastogne, I was treated as a replacement and felt like I was starting all over again." You know, as everyone heard from the interview that I did with the writer of this episode, Eric Bork, you know, his idea was to show things from the perspective of someone who's brand new. You know, so, you know, he definitely gets that right from that perspective. And having Webster as that character works twofold. Because he's someone who knows everyone, but he's also completely clueless and new with everything that's going on.
Yeah, he works well. And Ian Bailey is like well cast in that role. He's got a good, like, fresh faced expression. They've done a good job with the makeup and everything, as well as making everyone else look kind of dirtier and more worn in. And he's just come back and he's all bright eyed. He's all keen and eager and schoolboy, so he's doing a good job in that role. He's not an actor that I'm very familiar with, other than he's in the Rennie Harlan film Mindhunters, one of my favorite Rennie Harlan films. So we have talked about him a little bit over on Deep Blue Sea.
Wasn't he on ER?
He was on ER.
I know
but
Mularkey. I know Scott Grimes was on ER.
He did.
And I know that you went through all of ER.
We did, but he's only on 10 episodes. And he's like, he's not a character. He's played Jake Scanlon, and I don't know who that is. That does not ring a bell to me. He was in season 11, is when he was in half a season. So he's not a guy that I recall much from there.
I'm thinking that maybe he was maybe he was one of the paramedics or something.
That sounds about right.
He was a doctor. He was a doctor.
Okay. Great. There's a lot of them on that show. They didn't all stand out.
You're saying it's a good choice to say that he's a doctor because it means that
it's the safe bet.
The odds are you're right.
Yeah, I mean, if he's on just one episode, it's better off to say he was a patient, because there's even more of them. But if he'd had a little run, then yeah, doctor is what is probably
Well, he
the
was
safe
either a
bet.
patient or a very high-ranking doctor. You know, it was one
Yes,
of those two things.
sure, yeah. There's a lot of people on that show.
Okay, so he played a medical student. Ian Jake Scanlon was a medical student.
Okay.
He was having a relationship with Abby Lockhart.
Okay, sure. Again, not a short list.
Exactly. That's true also. But I'm trying to figure out why, you know, I'm trying to remember, it's because it's been so long since I've seen that, you know, how he was, you know, how they got rid of his character in the end.
Yeah, I don't think he has a page on the Wikipedia, on the ER fan Wikipedia page. Let's see. The relationship eventually ends, as Abby does not wish to be the reason Jake stays in Chicago and does not enter the residency he actually wants. So I think he leaves Chicago to go and work somewhere else.
He finishes medical student rotation and
moves on.
That was it. Yeah. He just moved on. Yeah, but the fact that I remember that he was on ER, I should say something.
You know, sure. Well done.
Because as you and I both know, there are 15 seasons of ER, and there are tons and tons and tons of people that have been on them. most of them for less than 10 episodes, but 10 episodes is still a nice amount.
And I watched it all quite compressed, so I'm not going to kick myself for not remembering
I watched it
relatively minor character of the run.
Exactly.
I probably watched season 11 in 3 days. So.
Okay, that's fair. I now binge watch. Back then, I didn't need to binge watch because it was on. Yeah. You know,
sure. Yeah.
That's the difference. And so we're back inside where Lip is lying on the getting himself situated on the couch, and Luz comes over to him, and Lip goes, "Hey, look who it is." And Luz goes, "Nice digs, huh, Lip?" Lip goes, "Yeah." And then Webster goes, "Sergeant Licton." And he goes, "Hey, look what I found." And he brings him a blanket. And he goes, and then Webster asks him, he goes, "Are you feeling all right?" And Les says, "There you go. He's got pneumonia. Sorry to hear about that." And Les then says, "What are you sorry about? He's alive. He's got a couch, a goddamn blanket. Snug as a bug." Yeah. Sergeant Malarkey said to check with the CO if I should be in second platoon. Luke goes, "Have a seat, Webster. We'll get you situated." And Webster says to him, how long have you been sick?" He goes, "Long enough.
Long enough.
Long enough." Yeah, so, you know, it's a nice interaction, and the fact that Lip does know who Webster is already a good sign, you know, because it's something that you know, as we've seen, most of the people need a little bit of a refresher who Webster is. But Lip, being the first sergeant, you know, remembers who he's dealing with, and all definitely makes sense.
Yeah, Luz seems to have forgiven Webster already, because he's just seen him in the Jeep and not been that friendly, but now he's like, hey, he's talking to him again. So,
right, that's true. But he's also tending to Lip at this point. So
that's sure. Yeah,
maybe less of it's not on his mind to be finding a way to deride Webster at this point, you know. And then the shot changes, and we're outside, and we get a shot of a river. And Winter says he wants us to cross the river. And Nixon goes, "Yeah, I bet that water's cold. Should be able to get you some boats." Winter looks up and goes, "Had to be a full moon. So much for the cover of darkness." So it's a nice way for them to open this up for what's going to happen through the rest of this this part. That he's laying the groundwork by saying, okay, there's a river, and it's probably very cold, and you know, we have a full moon.
Yeah, and you know, we talked a lot before about the shaving in this show and how Winter's always clean shaven. Nixon has just—he's just gone full on beard now. He's just given up shaving completely. I mean, not even trying now and then. As has Malarkey in this episode. It's not a part of my chapter, but there's some shots with him and Colin Hanks where Malarkey looks looks like unhoused. He looks like he's just been living on the street for a few years. And but that's what I like about this episode is Colin Hanks not in my chapter, but you like people don't like Webster coming back, but then you bring in Colin Hanks' his character, and he looks so much worse in comparison to Webster. So Webster kind of gets brought back into the fold because at least he's not Colin Hanks' guy. At least he's not Jones. So I think that helps his case moving forward. Webster.
True. True. Now I looked it up. Do you think that was there a full moon on February 9th, 1945 or not? What do you think?
Good question. Odds on? No. I would say that probably not.
And you would be correct. Okay. On February 9th, 1945, according to historical lunar data, the moon was in a waning crescent phase. The full moon would only occur on February 27th. So, again, we're talking 21 days later. So, again, I mean, you could
that
go back.
It feels like something they could have known when they made this show. And I feel like this scene wouldn't have lost anything if Winters were like, it's not a full moon. Maybe we'll have the cover of darkness.
Right.
Rather than saying, had to be a full moon, no darkness. Like, they could have. It doesn't all need to be doom and gloom. He could have had a little bit of hope in there.
Right.
I don't think that would have changed the air of the scene all that much.
True. No, I agree. But I find it very interesting that, you know, that at the time, I mean, there was the internet when they were making this. No offense to Eric Bork, you know, who wrote this. I'm sure, you know, he did enough research. But on that particular point, there was no full moon that night. Which means that it would have been a little easier to get across. It wouldn't have been as bright. But you know, who am I to question what was written here at the time? You know, it's a minor thing, as you said. It could have been worked in really well, in any situation of what the moon was at that time.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things.
Yep.
It just didn't. Yeah.
Exactly.
It didn't take away from the episode watching it. I didn't know, but now I know. You've ruined the show a little bit for me, Rob. So,
oh well.
It's your fault, I guess.
Does that mean you won't be back with me at the beginning of parts 9 and 10?
That depends. Are the lunar cycles correct in those episodes? I don't think they reference.
I don't know.
Them, we'll have to wait and see.
If they give us dates, I'll be able to check it. I know. Actually, sure. At the beginning of 10, it just says the month. It doesn't even say the date. Yeah. So yeah, it's gonna be a little more difficult to. Again, throughout the month of July in 1945, there was a full moon at some point.
Yeah, there was a full moon, at least one. Who knows?
Exactly, there might have been two. When we get there, maybe we'll check it out. You know, in two parts from now. Is there right. Anything else you wanted to add about this 5-minute segment or of part 8 in general?
Not the segment, but the episode. I like the episode. I like Colin Hanks, so it's nice to see him crop up. I don't know how he got the role. Although I'm told, I'm not sure if it's listening from your show or not, but apparently there were claims of nepotism getting Colin Hanks in here, but he apparently does look a lot like the real guy he was playing.
Correct.
So I find it just odd that Tom Hanks made this entire show just to cast his son in a role that he looks like. But fine.
Maybe Tom Hanks was looking for pictures and said, "Hey, here's what Jones looks like. All right, I'm making this miniseries
exactly
because I get to use a typewriter and I get to put my son in it. You know, maybe
exactly. That's all. That's takes his two boxes. That's all he needs.
That's right.
When the spoiler of this episode, the character of Jackson dies. Before he dies, he makes noises that reminded me of the zombie in World War Z. In the WHO bit with Brad Pitt at the end, that's kind of making these like jaw biting noise. When I listened to it, I was like, "Oh, that sounds like that zombie." But that's all I have. And I was like, "This is called The Last Patrol, and there's still two episodes to go. I don't understand." But now I've seen those two episodes, so I get it.
Well, they're normal.
But it's just looking through the list of episodes, like, hang on. What are we doing next? I can't wait to find out.
Exactly. All right, so now we will play the regular game for Jay of World War II movie trivia.
Hey, so I'm special.
Yes, you are. Well, that you know, because you're at the beginning of every one of these parts. I wouldn't trust anybody with that.
I volunteered. I signed up for this. This is my idea.
You actually wanted more, but I think in retrospect, you had more
Agree
that timing-wise, it wouldn't have worked as well.
Yep. This was hard enough.
But that's okay. It is
just get you.
First of all, it is much appreciated. And I like the continuity of it, so that's good too.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, so, I like interrupting your other guests who get the last two episodes of one season and have to wait. There's three people between them before they can come back again.
Yes, that happens quite often.
Yep.
All right, so let's spin the wheel and see what Jay's first question today will be. Pound it around and around the wheel goes. What is the name of both the novel and miniseries that are the sequel to The Winds of War?
Even I don't remember what The Winds of War is.
It was a Herman.
Doesn't bode well for me.
It was a Herman Wouk novel that turned into a miniseries about a family right before the outbreak of World War II, through Pearl Harbor and things like that, about all the different the different members of the extended family, what they were doing, during the beginning of World War II. And the sequel continues what happens through the course of World War II, including some of the characters, being in Germany or Poland and things like that, and others being in the service, either fighting or defending, of what's going on. I know that doesn't really help.
Certain you've mentioned it. No, I'm certain you've mentioned it on an episode, but I don't know at all.
It's called War and Remembrance.
Would never have gotten that.
I saw it once about 30 years ago, maybe even longer. I've been meaning to watch it again, but it's really long.
Sure. Yeah.
I think it's like 14 parts or something like that.
Yeah. Fair enough.
All right. So
next season.
No. So let's spin the wheel again and see what we get. Round and round and round. And you see, Jay, now you know there really is a wheel.
I do know there's a wheel. I've seen the wheel. Right. It's terrifying.
Who are the two main characters in the 1959 movie Never So Few?
Well, I've seen that.
There's a minor part for Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen. Yeah, that's why I've seen it. If you hadn't said it as a minor part, I would have said Steve McQueen's one of them. Because that's all. Is that Sinatra?
Yes,
in that
very
one?
Good. Okay. Sinatra and another one of the Rat Pack. Let's see if you can guess which one it is.
It's not Sammy Davis Jr. Is it? I don't think it's Dean Martin, but that's what I'm gonna guess. No. I can't remember any other members of the Rat Pack.
Do you remember which one is connected to Kennedy?
I would have said Sinatra.
No, well, Sinatra's connected to, sorry, let me remember which
don't.
One of them was the brother-in-law of Kennedy. How's that?
Oh, I have no idea.
Peter
Lawford. My Kennedy family tree is not good.
Okay, it's the answer is Peter Lawford.
I don't even know who that is. Good. It's not a name I know.
He was Kennedy's brother-in-law.
Okay, sure, great, good for him.
Exactly. Okay, and I mean the cast of that movie is just amazing. You have Sinatra, Lawford, McQueen. You have Paul Henreid. You have Dean Jones, Charles Bronson. Some of them were already very popular at the time, and some nobody even knew who they were. 1959, sure. I don't think very many people knew who Charles Bronson was. Or Steve McQueen, for that matter. He would have to wait a few years to go and say, I know who Steve McQueen is.
Yeah, he jumped over a fence. We tried to.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so let's spin the wheel again. Okay, in the 1963 movie The Great Escape, okay, who are the three characters who make whiskey for July 4th?
Tom, Dick, and Harry. No, so it's Hiltz, it's the scrounger, head.
Okay, Bradley. Yes.
And the other American. The third one, who was less prominent in the film, who I'm certain had a name, but I refuse to tell you what it is. Yeah, it's the other American I always forget, but he's like there, he's blonde.
He's not blonde. Sorry? Not at all.
No, Steve McQueen's blonde. In that film. No, it's the other guy. What was his name? Tell me.
Guff.
Okay, good. Yeah, him. You're right. I agree.
All right. So let's spin the wheel again. We got 2 out of 3. That's still pretty good.
I'm still pleased I remembered Frank Sinatra's in Never So Few.
Yeah, I'm very...
I was that like 10 years ago.
Okay. Who directed the... 1977 film Cross of Iron.
Never heard of it. So John Sturges, because he directed Never So Few.
All right, I'll give you a hint. This is a director that made some very, very controversial films in the 60s, and everyone ended up hating him basically because of his attitude for things. He directed The Wild Bunch, Straw Dogs, the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Major Dundee. Any of those help you?
Yeah, they should. I've seen Straw Dogs.
The Getaway.
Seen The Getaway.
The Steve McQueen.
I don't think I've seen that one yet. I've got a lot on Blu-ray. Can you give me what's his first initial?
Please? S.
S. And what's the rest of his first name?
No, and well, his last name begins with a P. How's that?
SP. I don't think it's in there.
Okay, his first name is Sam.
Sam Peckinpah. God damn it.
Exactly.
I actually saw
Cross of Iron a few months ago. I hated it. I thought it was terrible. It's basically
I've just found my review.
It's a World War II movie from the Germans. You know, with James Coburn, Maximilian Schell, James Mason. Again, not
how was Coburn's accent?
Seriously. Not a fan of that movie.
I've just found my review of Never So Few, and I also was not a fan of that, apparently. So.
Yeah, I didn't like it either. I never
gave it. I gave it a 5 out of 10.
I gave it a 5 out of 10. I gave it what you gave.
That's what I gave it.
Okay, I gave it also a 5 out of 10. There you go.
All right, good.
All right, let's spin the wheel for your final question today. And you're actually going to get a question from Saving Private Ryan.
Ooh,
so you have to get your thinking cap on.
I don't know. Ryan. They saved Ryan. he was a private.
Okay. What are the three names of Ryan's brothers?
Oh, piss off, Rob. Ryan, they're all called Ryan. Ha, gotcha. Technically correct.
Yeah, it's
I, Ryan. They're all called Ryan. Ryan, the second, then Ryan, the third. So his name was James Francis Ryan.
That's right.
His
James
brothers
Francis
were,
Ryan,
was one of them.
as opposed to James Frederick Ryan.
James Fred Frederick Ryan, sure. Iowa. Was one of them Bobby?
Nope.
Robert?
Nope.
No.
Bobby and Robert were the same thing.
Yeah, that was one guess. Was that I'm trying to think of when he's telling the story to Tom Hanks, and because they're yelling, they yell his name, like don't
You're
do
a
it.
Young man.
Yeah. I would just be guessing names, and it would feel disingenuous.
Okay,
so I don't
let
know.
Let me give you a little bit of a hint. The one that we see on the dead on the beach on his pack, it says S. Ryan. Does that help?
It means I can guess S names.
You
so
could.
Stephen.
No, and think about the fact that they're apparently an Irish family.
Sinead. Siobhan. I can only think of female S names. Sean.
Very good. Sean. Sean is one of them.
Sean. Okay.
Okay. Another one of them is the first name of the Rat Pack actor that was the brother-in-law of JFK that we just talked about.
Was that Peter?
Peter. Very good.
Okay. God. I had a moment there.
Well, I need to make you use your brain a little bit here. And the final one is let's see how I can try and think of a hint for you for this one. Okay, who is the director of 21 hours? Wait, 27 hours, sorry. 127 hours, sorry. Who's the director
of 127 hours? Jesus Christ, Rob. Keeps going up. It's still getting worse all the time.
Yes.
That is Danny Boyle. So Danny Ryan?
That's right.
Dan Ryan?
That's right.
Daniel Ryan.
That's right. So you have
okay.
James Francis Ryan, Daniel Ryan, Peter Ryan, and Sean Ryan.
Great.
Come on, I can't make this easy for you. You can't.
No, it's sure. it is a question about a World War II movie. I have seen the movie, and you've covered it over many, many episodes.
That's
right. But there was no way I was going to get it right.
Oh well, you know it's a learning experience, Jerry.
Sure.
All right, so now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie, which as you know, it's possible you're going to get something that we've already talked about, and it happens more often than I would expect it to.
It certainly does.
But it does. So let's.
The wheel is listening.
See what you get.
The wheel is listening. It's always listening.
That it is. Okay, I don't think you're going to get this one.
Oh, filling me with confidence.
Yes, completely. This is a movie
I agree.
From 1942.
Oh, okay, sure. My era.
There you go. And it's all about... the U.S. Marine Invasion Task Force that was bound for a small island in the Solomon Island chains in 1942.
Did you say 1943?
Yes.
So was this like a U.S. propaganda film?
Yes.
Okay, I'm never going to get it.
Okay.
Come fight the war, boys. Is what I'm going to guess the name
okay,
of this film.
I'll give you a little bit of a hint. The first word of the two words is the name of a famous island where there was a huge battle. Okay, and if you remember Pulp Fiction, it's mentioned there.
Hawaii? When
Butch is being told a story as he's a kid about the... about the watch.
I don't know Pulp Fiction as well as most people do, I think. I haven't certainly memorized the script, so I do not know the name of this island.
Okay. And I'm assuming you're not as familiar with the Pacific that I could, you know, that that's also one of the battles that's depicted there. I
haven't seen it yet.
Okay. Okay. I hear you emphasizing the yet, but it's going to take a few seasons at the least.
Sure.
Okay, so the answer is Guadalcanal Diary. That's the name of the movie.
Great. Okay. I'm thrilled to not be able to guess that.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
Have you seen it?
Yes, I have. It was okay. I wouldn't say it was a great movie, but again, it was propaganda. I mean, this is the movie came out in 1943, and the battle happened in 1942. So they were trying to, you know, show how American might is working in the Pacific, even though anyone who's seen the Pacific knows how brutal Guadalcanal was, and that movie is not brutal enough for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Sure. Okay, I will witness that when I watch the Pacific eventually.
There. All right. So, Jay, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Jay Clewitt?
Absolutely. Thank you. At Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, is where you can listen to me and a recent guest on the show, Mark Hoffmeyer, talk about Deep Blue Sea and films like it, such as Mindhunters starring Ian Bailey. You can find it everywhere podcasts can be found and follow us all over social media at Deep Blue Sea Pod.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Run Minute. You can find me on my website, movieruminute.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. And I will be back tomorrow with a guest who actually is not waiting in the wings, because you know, he didn't get cut off, and neither did Heather.
I would never cut Heather off. I have too much respect for Heather.
But until then,
Curry.